want to tell everybody once again how much I appreciate that they're here. This feast, in spite of the attacks by Satan to try and bring my spirits down that have been unsuccessful by him, although I did tell my granddaughter last night that I was going to whip his butt now. He had crossed the line because Emily had stuck her hand into a hot pot of broccoli cheese soup, and you know how cheese can get, and it started to blister up a little bit before we bandaged it up. But last night she showed me, she said, "Grandpa, look, no more burn." The blisters were gone. So, but I told her while she was still bandaged up, I says, "That's it. He's crossed the line. I don't care. I'm going to kick his butt now." He's gone from picking on me to picking on her, and that's it. This year is really a joy. One of the reasons why he's not going to be successful is so many other feasts, when I've come, there's been these problems going on, and you hear the rumblings in the background, and sometimes we have to defend things that we've decided to do, even though I decided to do it in my own room by myself if I need to. But there's been all these hidden agendas and everything else that's going on there, like, oh, well, we can't read from the law like it says to every 7 years. We want to hear preaching and sermons, and say, well, can we do both? Some years there's been people that have shown up that said, well, you know, you can't really trust Paul, his writings, there's really a question there whether Jesus is the Messiah or God's son, maybe a prophet at most. And so we've had to deal with that, with the anti-Yeshua boys. And God has put me through a lot of experiences, and I know a lot of people. I know it, that's nothing new, but I've been exposed to Tobias Singers and his lies. One of my close friends has written a bestseller, I believe. Unfortunately, it rose to number 22 on the list about how Jesus is not the Messiah. But I'm well-versed in some of those areas because we've had to deal with it in our own local congregation. So you come, you have a theme or what you're going to talk about for the feast, and then somebody comes along with Paul's a traitor and Jesus is not the Son of God, he's just a mamzer, because there's still some kids in here. Suddenly things switch gears, and we've got to bring messages out. And there's plenty of heresy out there still. You know, the one thing about heresy is that there's always a little bit of truth in there somewhere. Like, people just love, the Christian groups just love to pick on the Jehovah Witnesses, and they say, oh, that's a cult, or they, you know, oh, they're so bad. But you know, they have some truth too. They don't keep Christmas and Easter, and they know some of these things are pagan. So there is some truth mixed in with their heresy. There's a lot of other heresy that's out there that hopefully we won't have to deal with this year, but if we have to, we will. You know, there's things out there about pronouncing God's name a certain way, otherwise you're praying to Zeus. We've had to deal with that. One God. But that's going around in the Churches of God groups, the Sabbath-keeping groups. That's really an easy one after you've dealt with, is Jesus the Messiah in the first place? Is he God's son? You know, one God is kind of easy to wing it after you deal with that. But that's not what I want to talk to you about today. I get to talk to you this year about something, and I don't know if it's going to mean a lot to you, but it means a lot to me. I'm going to be able to share with probably the first time that we're not dealing with all these side issues. Something that God calls pure religion. So if you were going to put a title on this, I would call it pure religion. You can have people come up to you with their agendas, whatever they are. How do we pronounce a name? You know, do we believe in one, two, or three gods? Is Jesus the Son of God? Was Muhammad right? All of these different things. And I like to get in discussions, and I have friends that I get together with, and Paul and Terry have met one of them, and they find out, you know, and they do the same thing too with their friends, but... Paul told some of you, we went down to Louisiana and we stayed up till 3:30 in the morning discussing things. I mean, this is a normal thing for 3:30, me and Ross, normally when we're together, it's 5, 5:30. But he had to be to work at 5, so he had to cut it short at 3:30. What he didn't tell you is that my clock was set to the wrong time, so that when it was really only about 1 o'clock in the morning, but the clock said 4:30, and Paul's really getting worried. Ross has got to be to work in a half an hour here, and he's really feeling bad. You know, it's just, you know, man, he's thinking it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and it's only, or 4:30, and it's only 1 o'clock, so we had a little bit of a joke on that. He accused me of doing it on purpose, but it wasn't. Bear not false witness. Okay. But I want to give you some stats, some things that God has laid on our hearts that we want to bring to you. And now that we've talked to Frank and we've talked to Charlie about them, I can bring some of this to you. And I want to talk to you about, I only have time to talk to you about half, but fatherless children and widows. And because I can't cover both subjects, and I can't cover even one subject in one sermon, I can only do a little patch job on one of them. I chose the widows because there's probably, in this group, there's more widows than fatherless children, or women that will be widows than children that will be, by the time they're fatherless children, most of the, out of our group, they will have grown up and had children of their own, because there's a lot of fatherless children in this room, but your grandparents already, so. Let me give you some statistics. This is from the 2000 U.S. Census, so it's gotten worse since then. Because I know 15 years ago I would have thought, fatherless children and widows, you're going to talk to me about the widows, and you know, what do I care about that? First of all, I'm a man, I'm never going to become a widow. And second of all, you know, my wife is young, I'm young, what do I care? Well, listen to this. There are 12 million widows living in the United States today. Well, these are 2000 statistics. There are 700,000 new widows every year. 45% of women, let's have all the women stand up here for a minute. 45% nationwide statistics of these women standing here will be a widow by the time that they are age 65. By the time they hit 65 years old, now many, many more will become a widow than 45% because women live longer than men. But by the time they hit 65, they're going to be a widow. So look around, that's almost half. Now tell me if this is a pertinent subject for today. So somebody comes to me and wants to talk to me about how you pronounce God's name, or, you know, is Paul a traitor or anything else? Yeah, we got to deal with those things, but I want to talk to you about the widows today. Thank you for standing, ladies. Now I'm going to ask you to stand once more. Those women that are married that have a spouse today, please stand. Eight out of 10 of you will become a widow. Eight out of 10, your spouse will die first, statistically. Thank you. Half of all women that are over the age of 65 and older today live on $550 a month or less. $550 a month or less. Some people can't live on that for one week. I know people that make a lot more than that, and they can barely make it 1 week on that amount of money. Let's turn to James 1:27. Said I was going to call this pure religion. Different translations do it slightly different, but yours will be basically the same as what I'm going to read. James 1:27 says, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." Now I'm going to read something to you. Anybody that's got an interlinear or, you know, I've had 3 years of Hebrew, but I don't know any Greek, so I got to look it up in the interlinear and kind of guess. But that word "and" does not appear. It's translation's addition. It don't belong there. So let me read it to you the way it really is. "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, keeping oneself unspotted from the world." It's not that you do it and you keep yourself unspotted. It's that if you do it, you keep yourself unspotted from the world. Everybody's got a pet doctrine. I mean, I brought a booklet back there on the calendar, and I like to talk to people on the calendar. I studied sacrifices, and I like to talk about the spiritual aspect of the sacrifices. I studied the law. I like to talk about the law, and everybody's got pet things they like to talk about. But God's got a pet thing, too. And this is it. This is what he called pure and undefiled religion. You've heard people say, "Well, I'm a religious person." Or if they just, sometimes they might describe this about you, your family. They might think you're a little crazy. So Paul said his family thinks he's a little crazy. He's a Jesus freak. Say, "Well, he's a religious person, you know, a nutcase." Oh, really? A religious person, somebody that's pure and undefiled in God's mind, is somebody that does this. Now I want to tell you a little bit today. Hopefully I have time to go through it. Most people view ministering to widows as freebies and handouts. That's not, I mean, sometimes they need that. But that's not what it's really God's really calling for. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 22, verse 22. Because this is a powerful verse. This tells us the heart of God. You know, I brought up that I was angry, and I told my granddaughter I was going to go kick Satan's butt last night because he had messed with her. God has that same response if we do something. We're going to read it. It says, "You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way and they cry out to me at all, I will surely hear their cry." It is a promise. He's saying, you better, if they one peep, I surely will hear their cry. Here's what he's going to do. "And my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives will be widows, and your children fatherless." What was one of the things that Jesus had to say against the religious leaders of his time, how they devoured the widows' houses? What do the, I call them Pray TV guys, P-R-E-Y. What do the Pray TV guys do? They devour the widows' houses. They get on there and cry and say, "Oh, please send your money, we're going to go off the air." And then they take their $5 bills and $10 bills that the widows have sent in, because that's most of their support are $5 and $10 and $20 bills from widows. And they had to give it to God. I mean, it was more important to them than their heart medication, because here's God's man and he's crying and he's going off the air, and so they're going to harm themselves. Now, unfortunately, they probably don't cry out because they actually think that they're doing something for God by sending it to some scoundrel that squanders it and wastes it in the name of God. But if somebody oppresses a widow or takes advantage of a widow or does something evil to a fatherless child, you've messed with God's family. We all talk collectively how we're God's family, and we are. But specifically, he is a husband to the widow and a father to the fatherless. And if somebody, if a man messes with his wife or his child, basically what he's going to do is he's going to kill the man. And he's going to take your family from you. and take them as his. Because once he kills you and gets you out of the way, what does that make your wife? A widow. What does that make your children? Fatherless. Then he becomes your wife's husband and your children's father. There are very few things that God says, and we know what they are, it's idolatry, things like that, that his anger waxes hot. But he's got a hot button, and this is it. This is not over time, over long periods, over generations, over... It doesn't say if you mess with the widow or the fatherless and your son messes with the widow or father, I'm going to kill you down to the in the fourth or fifth generation. He's going to kill you. Up front, you're dead. Okay, let's take a look at Deuteronomy. Made a couple notes while I was sitting back there. Deuteronomy chapter 14. Starting in verse 28. It says, at the end of every third year you shall bring out the tithe of your produce in that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates, may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in the work, in all the work of your hand which you do. Flip over a couple pages to Deuteronomy 24, starting in verse 17. It says, you shall not pervert justice to the stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge, but you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and that the Lord your God redeemed you from this. Therefore I command you to do this thing. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Let me ask you a question. Now, I'm not talking about the widow that's physically unable because of illness. You know, physically she can't. That she needs someone to go out and get it and bring it to her. But if you leave the corners of the field or you forget something out in the field, you can't go back and get it. That's what Ruth was doing, by the way. We all know the story of Ruth. See, it's not just... Too often we think of the widow as just some poor, pitiful little thing. She was to go out into the field and harvest and work and get it, but we had to leave it there for her. We had to make it obvious and make it easy. Paul, Terry, and myself, 3 weeks ago, I think, we went up to a widow's center in Sevierville, and we've got a building, we'll talk about that during one of the Bible studies. We've been offered a building to do a ministry out of, taking care of fatherless children and widows. There's 38 widows in Sevierville that live in a widow center, but these are not your average widow. These are wives of, they've all lost their husbands, but they were missionaries, they were pastors' wives. There's a variety up there from Seventh-day Adventist to Pentecostal to Catholic and everything in between. These ladies, to give you an idea of their capabilities, for their building they raised $4.5 million in 90 days to build it. One of the widows we talked to up there, her and her husband started a hospital in India. Another one is in Africa right now. She's flying to Africa to do some work there. They're very active and very knowledgeable. Their ministry is to teach people how to minister to the widows. We went up, took their course, and they taught us. They want pastors to go back to their own churches. They said, so many of them said the same thing, I feel so guilty, so bad. While my husband was the pastor of the church, we had widows in our own church, and I could have had an influence, but I didn't. And so you go to a pastor and you say, how many widows you got in your church? If he says 10, there's 35. They taught us a lot of things about reaching out. But anyhow, they want to come down. There's 38 of them. They're going to staff the building, volunteer, do it for free, and teach the local widows in the area how to mentor with the kids, how to get started. And then as the local widows are equipped and ready to go, then they're going to back off and go on to do other things. 120 times in the Bible, it talks about widows and fatherless children. 119 out of the 120 times. The exception is one place in Psalms. They're grouped together. God doesn't separate them. Why do we? Churches and organizations, they have programs for the widows and programs for the kids and, you know, programs for divorced people, programs for young people, programs for older couples, programs for this, programs for that. They don't put the two of them together. They don't put the two of them and have the widows helping out and working and mentoring and helping the young. They don't have the young paired up with the widows. And we're not limiting it to widows. We're talking widowers and elderly couples, too. We need the men. Too many of the fatherless children don't have a father figure. They're not there. If they know who daddy is, he's off somewhere doing his own thing. He's not doing what he's supposed to be doing in the first place. So they might have a physical father, but they really don't have a father. He's out of the picture. It's a fatherless household. Girls. 300% more likely by the age of 15 to become pregnant if they don't have a father living in the house. Boys, 600% chance, higher chance that they're going to go to prison if there's not a father living in the house. You want to know what God says pure religion is? I'm not minimizing getting the gospel out to the four corners of the world and all of that stuff and the Great Commission, and God commands us to do that. But when we do it to the peril of the widows and the fatherless children, the organization is sick. And the Levites or the Melchizedekites or whatever you want to call it, well, they're taking care of themselves. You realize that we just read in here that the widow, the priests, why were things brought to them? Why did they put it up in the storehouse in the first place? Because it was their job to make sure that the widows and the fatherless children were being taken care of, even if it was to their own peril. That is why God entrusted them with the tithes. Think about that. Wherever you send your money to, if they're doing pure religion or not. Let's take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 18. I'm just going to hit a couple of these rapid fire so we can get through them. He administers justice for the fatherless and the widow, and he loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Deuteronomy 26, 12. When you have finished laying aside all the tithe of your increase in the third year, the year of tithing, and have given it to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat within the gates and be filled, you shall say before the Lord your God, I have removed the holy tithe from my house, and also have given them to the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, according to all your commandments which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed your commandments, nor have I forgotten them. I have not eaten any of it when in mourning, nor have I removed any of it for an unclean use, nor given any of it for the dead. I have obeyed the voice of the Lord my God and have done according to all that you have commanded me. Can we say that? Deuteronomy 27:19. Cursed is the one who perverts justice, do the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, and all the people shall say, Amen. In other words, the people are supposed to agree to this. That cursed is anybody that perverts justice to any of these. Job 22:9. You have sent widows away empty, and the strength of the fatherless was crushed. Therefore snares are all around you, and sudden fear troubles you. Oh, darkness, so that you cannot see, and an abundance of water covers you. You know, like I said, sometimes the widow needs some help. But the best way to help somebody is what? Paul and Terry and myself, when we had a meeting with the mayor and some of his officials and county commissioners, we told them, we said, we don't want to help, we don't want to give away fish. We want to help somebody learn how to fish so that they can help themselves. If they just want a free fish, they need to come to you and apply for welfare. We don't want to deal with them. And he said, that's what I want. That's what I need. We met with a police sergeant that the building that they've offered us, it's his beat. He's on site every day there. Because the neighborhood's not the best neighborhood, so we got resident cops right there. And I told them, I says, third generation, all I want is a free handout. They're already getting a free handout. We don't want to deal with them. Unless they want to help themselves. Unless they want to do something. See, we're going to run mentoring programs. We've already had the electricians union adopt our ministry, and they're going to come in and run apprenticeship programs. And then we haven't even talked to the plumbers union, the carpenters union, the steam fitters, and all the other trades. They get to cherry pick the best kids, but the kids will know that once they complete the apprenticeship program, they get a decent job. Heating and air, computer labs. That's something I got enough. Terry sleeps when he's at my house, he sleeps in my office. Terry, do I got enough computers for a computer lab? There's not room for Terry to put his coils anywhere. He's got to keep them in his car because there's computers everywhere. We can set up computer labs for him. God's put it on our hearts to do this. You're in Job 29:11. When the ear heard, then it blessed me. When the eye saw, then it approved me. Because I delivered the poor who cried out, the fatherless and the one who had no helper, the blessing of a perishing man came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. Let me tell you how much the widows are neglected. Daisy? Daisy's in my church. She's been in it longer than I have. She was in it before I came to Tennessee in 1986. She's fallen twice. Raise your hand, Daisy, so people know who you are. She's fallen twice coming down the steps of her front house so that she, the front steps of her house so that she can get her mail. She's got a son that's a contractor. We offered to build her a ramp. Her daughter, somebody, Wanda asked me, you know, Daisy needs a ramp. She keeps falling. So I talked to her and she said, well, my son's a contractor. I'll have him get the materials. Well, the son never come up with the materials. But she's got children. It's the children's responsibility to take care of their parents. You know, in the society today, the kids, you know, most of the time, when we talk here about elderly abuse, usually it's the kids that get control of their parents' finances, and then they stick them away in a home somewhere, or they put them in a room in their basement while they consume all their money, and as soon as the money's gone, they stick them in a home. Most of abuse for older people comes from their old the biggest percentage of that comes from their own family. Now, Daisy's not going through that, but she has children that should have put up something for her. But Paul and Terry went over to her house and they put up some railings so that she can get up and down her steps. But this is somebody that's been in the church longer than I have and has had this problem, and it's my responsibility if the kids don't do it. And she had slipped through the cracks. So don't think that, well, everybody that I know of, you know, it's cool. We got a program where when you go back home where you fellowship, don't think everything's so settled. I'm giving an example, embarrass myself, talk about some of my shortcomings, and see, the problem with the widow is they won't tell you that they're hungry. They won't tell you that they don't have any money or food. They won't tell you that their kids aren't taking care of them. And most of the time, they won't even tell their kids that they're hungry or that they don't have any money or food because they're afraid that the kids will then think that they can't handle their own finances. They won't tell anybody. Last year, we talked to you about a widow. Her name is Judith McClure. She's been in the church for, I don't even know how many years, since the 60s. Her son is in prison, and her husband is dead. And Harold Dixon and Randy Peoples, a couple years apart, had both come to us and told us about her plight and our response. Man, she's in Metropolis, Illinois. How are we going to help her? She's a third of the way across the country. I've never even been to Metropolis, Illinois. She's down to a 10 by 10 area in her house, her trailer. She stuffs blankets and rags and sheets in the cracks between her walls and her floor because you can look through where the wall is supposed to be joined to the floor and you can see the ground. She's got to turn her water off in her house when it gets close to zero because all of the little bit of pipe she has left will freeze. And it's got to be drained because the only water she had left was in her bathroom. None in the kitchen, none anywhere else, down to the bathroom. We called her when finally, I think Randy was the second one to get on us and said, you really need to check this out. And she told us, no, I'm fine, don't need any help. But see, we knew that wasn't true. We are not there, haven't been able to see it, but as of yesterday, she's supposed to have a different home. Clayton Homes donated a trailer that they took in on trade to her, and then we paid to have it moved and set up. And a year ago, I would have been telling you, well, yeah, that's the kind of ministry it's going to be. We're going to help a widow here, help a widow there. Enough money came in to take care of all of this. We did it, and because it was going to be during the feast, right before the feast that all this was taking place, we couldn't even be there, but the dealer, the woman that I talked to originally on the phone that said, maybe we could help, maybe we could do something, her father used to be in a prison ministry. And his heart went out when he heard about her son. She lost her son and her husband within a few months of each other. The son went to prison. The $40,000 that her and her husband had saved up to build their house on the land that they bought went to the lawyer, and she's living on a little over $400 a month. But now she's taken care of. That's the case of, you know, somebody that needs a handout. She can't help herself physically, financially, or anything. Somebody had to step in. And I don't think that there's a lack of Sabbath keepers. There is a Sabbath-keeping church in the Metropolis, Illinois area. But we never met the woman until Paul and Terry went up to see her last November to really check it out and see what was going on. So what I'm saying is the Sabbath groups that are out there aren't doing a good job either. They're doing about the same kind of job, I guess, all the other groups are doing, Sunday to whatever. But that was an educational thing for me because we didn't have any money, we didn't have anything, and money started coming in, earmarked for that project, and got on the telephone and called. We had one deal fall through. We were supposed to have a home in January for her. It was a blessing in disguise when the dealer that agreed, he told us it was in good condition, but when he pulled it out to take it over there, we were supposed to pay for the moving and setting it up. It literally broke in two, it fell apart. So obviously it wasn't that good of a trailer. This one is a little dollhouse, in very good shape. It needs zero work. They said floors are immaculate, walls are immaculate. It's nice. Let's take a look at Psalm 68, verse 4. Sing to God, sing praises to his name. Extol him who rides on the clouds, by his name Yah, and rejoice before him. A father of the fatherless, a defender of the widows. In God is his holy habitation. Well, you know, if somebody was really unscrupulous, there's all these Pray TV guys out there, if they were really, I don't know, even if you were just a con man, you could say, well, wow, if God is a father of the fatherless, a defender of the widows, a husband of the widows, let's do something and get blessed, because there's blessings that go along with helping. But Satan hates so much that he really doesn't even do that. That very little of that is going on. Psalms 146, verse 9. The Lord watches over the strangers. He relieves the fatherless and widow, but the way of the wicked he turns upside down. Well, I'm praying that he turns the way of the wicked upside down a little bit more often. But the fatherless and the widow have been neglected for far too long. Proverbs 15:25. The Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but he will establish the boundary of the widow. You know, I know women are interested too, but it's a guy thing to, you know, you get some property and you look around, and I know when I bought mine, I had to look and find the little boundaries, markers and stakes, and a lot of times we get it surveyed, and that's my property. And if you see your neighbor over there, and he's got his pickup truck, and there's a chain attached to a little metal pole in the ground, and he's jerking that pole out, and you see him do that, and then he walks over about 10 or 15 feet and he's got a sledgehammer and he starts knocking it back into the ground, most men will grab their shotgun and run out there and say, what are you doing? You're stealing my property. You're moving my boundaries. You're messing with me because, you know, by extent, this is my place, you know, the king of the castle type thing. But God establishes the boundaries of the widow. He's the one who takes care of that for her. What happens if we do it to the widow? What happens when the government comes in and the widow... I lived in an oppressive state, Wisconsin. If you break it up, you kind of figure out what they do to you. First they do the first part on you, then they con you, and there's nothing but sin there. But I saw where they would come in and a widow's house would be not in the best shape and the yard would be overgrown with weeds and kind of dilapidated. They literally would come in there and clean it out, bring in a county truck and throw the junk in the dumpster and come in there and whack the weeds down in the yard, and then they put it on her taxes. And then if she can't, she's probably not even barely able to pay her taxes in the first place, and then what happens, at least up there, the third year your taxes aren't paid, guess what they do to your house? At year three up there, your house goes to auction. Boy, I used to think about going to auctions and buying houses. I wish I had a little bit more money. I could do that. You could. They got TV shows on it now, but they got these shows I've watched a few times called Flip This House, but I had that idea before. go in there, buy it at an auction, fix it up and flip it, and not only make TV show out of it, but man, am I glad that I never bought a house that was from a widow that the government had taken away from her because she couldn't pay her taxes. Isaiah 1:17, let's turn there. I don't know if I'm going to get to all these, but Isaiah 1:17 says, learn to do good. So what's good? Seek justice. Rebuke the oppressor. Defend the fatherless. Plead for the widow. Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. This is something, an instruction that he's telling each one of us. What we're supposed to do, we're supposed to learn. Listen up, guys. We need to learn and do what's good. We need to learn how to do good. We got to seek justice, rebuke the oppressor. What do you got to do when you rebuke the oppressor? How do you do that? You got to get in his face and rebuke him. Defend the fatherless and plead for the widow. And if we do these things, any of you don't have sin in your life, but if we do these things for God, because he's the defender of the widows and the father of the fatherless, just come now, let's reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be white as snow. A blessing for doing that type of work will fall upon you. So if you think, oh, I'm a really lousy, rotten so-and-so, you want to get rid of that in God's eyes? Go out and do some of his work. Though they are red like crimson, they shall be as wool. If you are willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. That's what I told you, some of the blessings that come with this. But if you refuse and rebel, say, no, I want to put my time into deciding if Sabbath starts on the new moon and it's the first day of the month, the eighth day of the month, the 15th day of the month, or if Sabbath starts at midnight on Saturday morning and it runs from Saturday, you know, midnight Saturday, midnight Sunday, or what about noon to noon, or I want to do any of these other crazy wacko ideas, hidden agendas, and I want to take as many people as I can with me and deceive them. So I'm going to rebel. I'm not going to do what you said to do, God. It says, you shall be devoured by the sword, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken. He'll devour men, ladies. He'll devour us if we don't do this for him. Isaiah 54:4. Do not fear, for you shall not be ashamed, neither be disgraced, for you will not be put to shame, for you will forget the shame of your mouth, and you will not remember the reproach of your widowhood anymore. For your maker is your husband. I know this doesn't help when you are scared, maybe hungry, worried about what to do. But the widows that are out there, you're not alone. You know, little boys, they always, I talk about this quite a bit in Knoxville, but little boys, when they grow up, they're talking about, my daddy's bigger than your daddy, my daddy can beat your daddy up, you know, that type of thing. But you, widows, have a husband. You know, you've got a hotline. You know how the movies back in the 70s and 80s, they had the red phone and the president could pick it up, and when he picked the red phone up, it rang over in the Kremlin. You've got that hotline to God. He's waiting to hear their prayers. Now we pray, he hears our prayers, I'm not minimizing that. But we pray and we ask God and we plead for God to do things and we ask, you know. Instead of treating the widow like, oh, you just shh, behave and be nice, be good, don't cause too much trouble. Just go sit over here in the corner and be good. Everybody knows the story about the widows in the front line and the prayer warriors, and you want prayer warriors in your ministry, you want prayer warriors in your church. Empower your widows. Empower them and get them together with the fatherless kids. Let them help the fatherless kids out. Let the fatherless kids develop a relationship and adopt, you know, be adopted like a spiritual grandma. And you get them fatherless kids, and the widows can get the fatherless kids and, hey, these things are going on and we need help and we need God to intervene. And you get them together, God's waiting to hear their prayers. You can have, if you give me the choice between 10 preachers praying about something and 5 widows and 5 fatherless children praying about something, and I'm sick or I need something or whatever, forget the preachers, excuse me, but I want the widows and the fatherless kids praying for me. Thank you very much. Let's take a look at Zechariah chapter 7, verse 9. Thus says the Lord of hosts, execute true justice, show mercy and compassion, everyone to his brother. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the alien or the poor. Let none of you plan evil in his heart against his brother. Let's flip over to the New Testament. Let's take a look at Luke chapter 20, verse 45. I alluded to this, but let's read Jesus' words. It says, then in the hearing of all the people, he said to his disciples, beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplace, the best seats in the synagogue, and the best places of feast, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation. We all know about how Jesus chastised the religious leaders, but let me tell you, it was a sore spot what they did, those leaders did to the widows, and how they manipulated them. Let's take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 3. Honor widows who are really widows. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. And that's why I said that if they've got children, it's their kids' responsibility. But always, sometimes the kids are, in reality, the widow's greatest enemy. I know half of my sisters, if they had a chance, they would devour what my mother has like that. If they could get their hands on it. And it's probably like that in many other families. But when you have a widow who is really a widow, and her children won't help her, what do you do? What do you do when they come to you and say, here, take a stone and be warm? Here, I got one out of the fire, it's still warm. Here, go with you. But they come to you and they're hungry and they need help. Empower them. Help them. Let them know that there's somebody that if they can ask a question, you know, young boys like to learn how to work on cars. If they want to learn how to work on cars, let them fix the widow's cars. Let them learn on those with help and supervision of somebody that knows what they're doing, obviously, so that they just don't mess it up. And now it's, instead of a $200 repair job, it's $2,000. Verse 5, now she who is really a widow and left alone, trusting God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. A lot of times that's what's going on. Verse 6, but she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. These things command that they may be blameless, for if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. You know, I've quoted that verse and talked about low-life men that won't provide for their own household, and that's a bad thing, but in the correct contents, it's talking about the children that won't provide for their parents. Yeah, you better take care of your own household. But the verse that I've quoted mistakenly and misapplied in the past and thought I was doing it right is specifically for those that won't help their own parents. Verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. So there's, you know, sometimes you can be a widow at any age, you know, any, if you were married, you could become a widow at any, whether you're 18 years old or 30 years old or 80 years old. But it's not the church's responsibility to care for a 30-year-old widow the rest of her life. That's not what the goal is. She should eventually move on. She might need some help, some temporary assistance and help of some kind, but she needs to move on with her life and find somebody that will provide for her, or once her children get old enough, they can do it. She needs maybe some skills, job skills, help to learn how to provide for herself, things like that. But a widow that's really a widow, the biblical widow, 60 years and older, she's the church's responsibility. Sometimes it might be put up a railing, sometimes it might be getting her some groceries, sometimes the worst thing you can do is give them cash because her kids will come along and take the cash. They'll have an emergency. Sometimes it's go and talk to the kids and say, why are you robbing your own parents or your own mother? But somehow, some flavor, sometimes she don't even want you to mess with her. She don't want help. She's, you know, you got to figure it out, and we got to do something, because what we have been doing so far doesn't work. It's broke. You know, so even if we do the wrong thing and we can learn from our mistakes as we go, but at least it's doing something, because we haven't been doing anything. Now you hear stories about organizations in the past, and they collected third tithe, and third tithe was for pool, for the minister's backyard. Well, they shouldn't be a minister if they've been doing that, because that shows that, you know, well, if you took money for a widow and put a pool in your backyard, theoretically, they should be dead. But if God, for whatever reason, didn't strike them dead, they certainly shouldn't be a minister anymore. But what we all need to do is it's not just pass the buck and let somebody else do it. You know, sometimes we broad brush everything too broad and say, well, you know, the reason why people just keep going to church on Sunday is they won't read their own Bible. It's easier to put a 20 in the plate when it passes by you and have the preacher tell you what you're supposed to do. And I know that's not really what happens, but, you know. Maybe it's more than just, oh, let me write a check out, and I'll put on here widows and fatherless children, and I'll send it to somebody, and let somebody else do all the work, and I don't have to worry about it. I don't think that's what God has in mind when we read back here in Isaiah, wherever it was, about come, let us reason together. It's not as easy as cutting a check and letting somebody else take care of it. You're responsible too. So what I'm trying to do, I guess, is not be a downer. I don't want this to be a downer. I want everybody to go home to your cabin or your camper or wherever you're staying and think about this and think about what your own priorities are. Where you placed your importance up until now. Because if you're like most people, there's a saying out there that says you got to take care of number one. Whose number one are you taking care of? Yours or God's? If you want to have pure religion, pure theology, and I'm not telling this, I'm not talking about neglecting or treating your own family like your wife is a widow and there are households where they got a man living in there, they know who he is, they might call him dad or pa or whatever. He occupies a chair in the living room and he sleeps in one of those rooms and he grunts at him and says, "Shut up, I'm watching the game," and they're just as good maybe as fatherless. Or I'm not talking about neglecting your own family for peril. But I'm talking about, where are your priorities as far as what God says? Yes, we are supposed to take care of our own. We are supposed to watch over our children. Our children are our responsibility, and we're supposed to do whatever it takes to make sure that they have a relationship with God and with God's Son. And if, you know, that's what Deuteronomy 6 is. Go back and read Deuteronomy 6. From the time that they rise up in the morning till the time you go to bed, you shall teach these diligently to your children. That's your responsibility. But I'm talking about the other things. The causes you support, the things that you get involved in yourself, the things that trip your trigger that are emotional buttons for you, the areas you study, the things you want to get involved in. Where are they? What are those priorities? What do you want to sit around and talk about and dig into when we talk about digging into the meat? You know, I've been on, so many people are just interested in milk. I want meat. And I'm praying that your priorities will line up with what God calls pure religion. Because I'm going to tell you right now, three guys can't do everything we're going to do. Three guys can't accomplish this. But this is something we really do believe can grow and catch on. And so often we talk about a work or a ministry or this or that, and how are we going to do this, and what are we going to raise for money, and what are we going to... It's not crazy. We'll talk about some of the stuff and the programs and the plans we have, but it's not... I don't know where God's going to take this, because he switched gears on us a week and a half ago. You know, actually, he just shifted into from third to fourth. We were still ramping up, you know, but I thought at least, and we had been flying down the interstate at 70, and he slammed it into reverse and, you know, spinning things around and doing some stunt driving here, and had some talks with him about what are you doing. And but I understand now this was all in his plan. But if this is something God wants, if this is a priority of his, you know what the limiting factor is? Our own stubbornness, our own prejudice, our own laziness, our own unwillingness to dive into something that God says is a priority to him. And ladies, 4 out of 5 of you will be a widow. If for no other reason than your own selfish views, talk to your husband. Get something going in your area. It doesn't have to be huge and grand and grandiose, and it can be something small. like getting together with other widows in the church or the ladies in the church getting together and seeing what they can do to help somebody. And then you all go home to your husbands and start whispering in their ear about, you know, we need to do something for Mrs. So-and-so. It doesn't have to be huge, grandiose things. I talk about how Jesus catches us one at a time, and we don't come popped out of the water, battered, fried, and tartar sauce spread out over us. When you catch a fish, first you catch it, then you clean it. And that's the way he does with us. When you help a widow, or you help a fatherless child, no matter how you do it, it still comes down to the same thing, one at a time. Frank said something to me yesterday afternoon. He said, how many people would Jesus have come and died for? What if there was just one? Would he have done it? It works the same way for everything, no matter how you look at it. It's still one at a time. And if you do one, and then another one, and another one, pretty soon you got a whole fistful of them. And a lady up at the Widow Center that I've known for quite a while, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but she said the things, something like this. She says, see these individually, she's comparing them to the widows, individually they don't look like much, but together they're a force to be reckoned with. Pretty soon you'll have a whole fistful of them. So go back home this afternoon and pray and see where your priorities are. And then let's see what we can do together and individually wherever you're at. Thank you.